Morning, everyone.
Morning.
So you may have noticed a slight addition to the Zendo, which is the altar on the other side of the room from where we usually, from my usual altar. And we set this up today because we're going to do our annual Sijiki ceremony. So I'm going to talk a little bit about it today. And this ceremony is also known as Sagaki, feeding the hungry ghosts. Gaki means hungry ghost. And this term has been used in a derogatory way at times. So we also use Sijiki, which means making food offerings. And in Japan, this ceremony is done with, can you hear me? Okay, yeah. In Japan, the ceremony is done as a part of the Obon festival, which is a big deal, big annual celebration of the ancestors with dancing, and it's a very rich time. And that is, Obon is also celebrated here in this country, mostly at Japanese American temples that are predominantly Japanese American. And in other temples, it got kind of moved to near Halloween. So I've been thinking about Sijiki and how important it is. And I've also been thinking that we should have another day in the year simply to honor our ancestors, simply a remembrance day for honoring our ancestors. So we'll do that at another time. It's interesting to consider the different ways that humans have celebrated those who have passed. And I want to talk today about two that have particular impact on the way we've adapted Sijiki, one from Europe and one from the Americas. So the ancient Celts and contemporary pagans celebrate Samhain. You all, are any of you familiar with that? Yeah, I know some people online are familiar with it. It's a liminal threshold festival when it's thought that the boundary between this world and the other world thins, and spirits can more easily enter our world. So special bonfires are lit, rituals are carried out, there are offerings of food and drink, and souls of dead relatives and ancestors are thought to revisit homes. So often there is a place set at the table where food is offered. Also, in the Celtic traditions, mumming and guising are part of the festival. So at least from the modern era, and people went or go door to door in costumes, reciting verses in exchange for food. Some think that the costumes are a way of either imitating, embodying, or maybe avoiding the spirits that are coming into this, disguising oneself. In the 9th century, the Western Church endorsed November 1st as a date of All Saints Day and November 2nd as All Souls Day. And these two holidays influenced one another, or you could assume perhaps that All Souls Day, All Saints Day kind of glommed on to Samhain and said, oh, well, we're just going to make this into another kind of religious holiday. There's this syncretic movement in all cultures, right? It just happens. Most American Halloween traditions were inherited from Irish and Scottish immigrants. So that's how this came. And many folklorists and researchers in this area, up until the 19th century, used the word Samhain to refer to Gaelic Halloween costumes. So you can see the language and the ceremonies came together. In our part of the world, and in many, many other parts of the world, we have a celebration of Dia de los Muertos, right? In English, the Day of the Dead, also celebrated this time of the year. And most people who study such things think it combines the ancient Aztec. It's originated, I believe, in Mexico, where it's the primary, it's the kind of the heart of the celebration of this holiday. So this combination of ancient Aztec customs of celebrating ancestors with the All Souls Day holiday that the Spanish invaders brought with them when they came. So in the early 1500s, so there's this kind of mixing. This is a unique holiday, but I think it also has a lot in common with Samhain and Obon. It's a, as we know, it's a multi-day holiday with family, friends, and community gather to pay respects and remember those who have died, as well as there's home altars, ofrendas, with favorite foods and beverages of the departed. And people visit graves and make offerings and share food, and there's a sense of communion and engagement between the living and the dead. One thing I learned recently, which I thought was pretty interesting, is the practice of writing often irreverent verses as a form of mock epitaph for your living friends. So can you imagine how much fun that would be to like poke fun at people? It's an established literary form. So I just want to stop and say last Tuesday, Patty was talking a bit about her family celebrations, and I want to invite you, Patty, to, if there's something you'd like to add to this.
I just like to add with this that the practice of the practice of having a home altar is it's encouraged people to do that themselves. There's no formula to it, but having a home altar to honor the people that you've lost
yeah.
and not with us anymore. It's very comforting and it's fun and it's a good thing to do. It's very personal thing to do.
Great, thank you. You know, home altars are part of many, many traditions, including our tradition. And I, you know, love the idea of changing if you have a home altar, as we do with pictures of deceased family members on it and friends. But I love the idea of like that being a syncretic thing and honoring the cultures that we live in here that we have received so much from. To make it an ofrenda for some period of time. So these days of remembrance are the result of the meeting of cultures. And we bring all of this and more to the way we experience and celebrate our ancestors in our lives. You know, how do we do that in our lives and also at Tsujiki? The origin of the Tsujiki ceremony is loosely associated with one of Buddha's disciples, Moggallana, whose mother died and ended up in the realm of hungry ghosts. So this is one of the realms of existence that's thought to exist in Buddhist cosmology. And as we'll see later when I describe it a little bit, it's a painful one. So there are quite a few versions of this story, but all agree that Moggallana was quite distressed about his mother's situation. And he went to the Buddha and asked for help freeing his mother from this pain. he had already tried himself many times, but it didn't work. So the Buddha told him that he needed to transfer some meritorious act to his mother to give her the positive results of his practice. So in one version of the story, he goes to ask the god of the lower realms, Yama, don't you love all this like mythology? And it's amazing what we come up with as human beings to try and express the truth of our lives. Anyway, so he goes down to find Yama, the god of the underworld. And as it turns out, on that one day, Yama's not there because all the hungry ghosts leave that realm and they can receive the merit offered to them through our prayers and our feet fed. So our Sajiki ceremony fits with these versions of the story. In it, we make offerings to the spirits and give them the vehicle by which they are freed from suffering. We offer care, food, tea, the sweet smell of incense, chanting, song, and we offer them the Dharma. We can think of the label hungry ghosts in several ways. It's a reference to one of the realms associated with the Gakis. These beings, we have pictures of them. These beings are understood to have huge stomachs, which are the result of the fact that their necks are really tiny. And their necks are so tiny that they can't, they don't allow the passage of sustenance. So this is a really desperate state of suffering. It's a hell realm. It's also a way of considering all the beings in our world who are haunted by not enough, unable to receive what is present. And it's also a metaphor for a way of considering our own sense of longing for something we cannot find, or if we find it, we cannot receive it or absorb it, integrate it, enjoy its benefits. We can think of this as we live in a culture that sets up standards of success, wealth, status, beauty, relational status, ability, you name it, right? We can think of all these ways that these markers that indicate whether we can be considered, whether we ourselves consider ourselves or we consider others to be worthy of respect, of help, or even of living. If we accept these markers, and it can be hard not to, we become caught in a painful reality of not enough, never enough. Hunger, greed, dissatisfaction, and disappointment and craving. And we can also get caught in judging others. They're not enough. They're not worthy. When we remember that we and others are not these definitions, we are free to live in another reality, one not bound by corrosive ideas. And we slip back again. We find it again. And this is one of the reasons we need one another. This is community. To see and be seen as Buddha, to see and be seen as worthy, is crucial for us. One story about the importance of being together in this way is, you're probably all familiar with it. It's a story of beings who are sitting at a table full of food, but they are not able to eat because their chopsticks or forks are so long that they can't reach their own mouths. And it does not occur to them to feed each other. So they continue to suffer, they continue to be hungry and to be surrounded by all they need but are unable to access. All it takes all it takes is one glance around the table, one moment of taking in the reality of the situation, and then the courage to be the first to be generous, to give to another, and everything can change. One moment of seeing clearly and everything can change. We are no longer without sustenance. We are together with other beings who also have need, and we sustain one another. All of those judgments, all of those rankings, all of that bullshit drops away. And we see clearly. Spiritually, we may not be able to access the wisdom and compassion that is present in our lives because we can't see a way out of our limited view. Sometimes it is because we cannot see that we are all in the same boat. We do not see our shared humanity in the Saha world, that we need each other. We need each other to live in a way that frees us. In other words, we cannot see what is right in front of us. We cannot see that if we feed one another, if we see one another in this way, there is plenty for all, and we all come alive. We may also know something is off, but we can't figure out how to change. And our buddies help us. Yeah. All of these ways and more can keep us bound. But when we offer connection, recognition, companionship, and walk together, we find the fruit of connection, companionship, and everything changes. This is the nourishment of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So this ceremony is about feeding, easing dissatisfaction, our own and others. This is the state of the Saha world. Our practice is to help all beings. And a part of that practice is finding peace in ourselves. I'm not so fond of the statement, you know, you have to love yourself before you can love others. You know, you have to be at peace before you can find peace with others. I'm not so fond of that at all, because it presumes that you have to get to some perfected state before you can be with other. I'm much more enamored of the phrase foolish human beings, that none of us are ever perfected. And if we wait until we are, nothing will ever change. So we're in this boat. Shinchu and I have this card on the wall. It says, is it the little boat of you and me? Anyway, we're in this boat of you and me. It's the vehicle. It's the big boat. It takes all of us. And we're sailing on this sea. We're sailing on the sea together. So we all, like, hopefully, if we're rowing in the same direction, it helps. We don't go around in circles. So this ceremony and these teachings is about us finding that sense of together, that sense of mutual recognition. So we can understand this ceremony as a balm for those beings seen and unseen who are caught in the hungry ghost realm. For all people and beings of this world, known and unknown, but we know to be suffering in this way. It is a prayer to heal the world. It is a prayer for ourselves that we may be fed and sustained by the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And we ask all of us, all of the ancestors, all of the bodhisattvas, all of the Buddhas, all of the beings to hear us and be with us, alleviating the suffering. So feel free to think of these Buddhas and ancestors however you like. The idea is that when we do the ceremony or when we enter this place, we enter a space in which all beings are present. Those alive now, those that have passed. We call on all aspects of reality to nourish us. So, you know, this ceremony we inherited and adapted. We inherited from a Japanese Buddhist tradition, you know, it's like our clothes and the things that we chant and all kinds of things, you know. Some people say, what is it with all this Japanese stuff? And I've been thinking about that lately. I want to give a talk on that. Why? Well, why have an ofrenda? Why do we not access what we can with all due respect? So this is what we're doing here today, but feel free to do what you like in the same spirit. Just a few words about what we have. You may have noticed we've got things hanging around. So the banners hung behind the altar up there are representations of five Buddhas, many jewels to Tathagata. The Tathagata is the Buddha, is a Buddha. Wondrous form body, Tathagata, king of sweet dew, Tathagata, and boundless body, Tathagata, and freedom from fear, Tathagata. The four corners of the Zendo are protected by the guardian kings or queens. I kind of don't want to gender them. So the guardian sovereigns, king, queen, sovereign. And there are also two banners with efficacious mantras written on them. You can see them up there. So mantras, along with certain chants that we do, are really invocations of a certain spirit. So this altar is for the hungry ghosts. It's placed opposite the main altar in order to skillfully offer the teachings. A friend and fellow Zen teacher, Kyogen Carlson Roshi, said of this altar, by making an offering on a table far away from any statue or picture of a Buddha or Bodhisattva, those who reject religious teachings can accept kindness if it is offered without doctrine. For the Dharma to be really Dharma, it can only be offered in forms that can be accepted and truly made use of. Offerings of any type made in such a manner will naturally benefit both the recipient and the donor. So the idea is we have light, food, tea, flowers, fruit, vegetables, lots of squash, pomegranate, candy, all kinds of things. Huh? What is it? Donut holes. A toothpick? Oh, so people can eat the hungry ghost can eat the donut holes? That's wonderful. That's great. And after the Dharma talk is over, we'll gather. And did anybody bring any other offerings to put on? Yeah. So we'll,
I did that.
Okay. So that we've already put the offerings up there. And so I'll come in and offer incense and make a statement. And before we start there, one of the things that we do in Sajiki is make noise. So there's various noise makers over there. And for those of you at home, if you're going to stay, and you're more than welcome to stay, get a pot and a spoon, or if you have a rattle, or you just want to holler, that's good. So the idea is that these sounds are to call the hungry ghost here. To call, they should be they should be eerie and mysterious, the sound. And then I'll read something, and then you join in with the reading. And there are bells and incense, and we will do chanting to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and do a chant of what's called the Gate of Sweet Dew, which is about this kind of offering. And then Shinshu will do a mantram, a chant, a Dharani mantram, for as a kind of calling forth and blessing. It's quite beautiful. Then we recite this, and there's another short recitation and a chant. And closing statement. So the whole ceremony takes about 10 minutes or so, 10, 15 minutes. So I welcome you to stay, and I welcome you at home to participate. The idea is we are calling forth the Buddhas and ancestors to help and witness our deep desire to offer sustenance and substance to hungry ghosts, to all those lost and hungry and suffering in this way, whether it be our own suffering or another's. And we call all beings to come and be supported and nourished in a way that frees us and them. We perform this ceremony with the heart of compassion for self and others, in the hope that we all find peace, and we remember to feed each other.